You're listening to an old episode of Metal Gear Mondays. To keep up with all of the new episodes, please check out patreon.com/Metal Gear Mondays.
This week on Metal Gear Mondays, Otacon and Snake go backpacking throughout Europe to try and find themselves. Ladies, gentlemen, boys, and girls, welcome to Metal Gear Mondays, the Metal Gear Solid podcast, where we cover all of the Metal Gear games in roughly chronological order, from top to bottom, left to right, inside and out. As always, I'm your host, Alessio Summerfield, and this week I'm joined by Isaac Lim.
Over eggs.
And continuing the British invasion, we have a guest. And we have Patrick Smith, a.k.a. Patty Stardust, from Twitter and the Twin Humanities podcast. Patty, introduce yourself.
Did you like my glasses, Snake? Fucking working on that all day.
It was really good.
Thank you.
It was really good.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm really, really excited. I love Metal Gear. I love Metal Gear. If you've listened to my show, you'll know that I love Metal Gear. I'm very, very excited.
Yep. And I also want to throw a shout out to, honestly, I want to say it was Jeremy Greer that bridged these gaps, because Jeremy Greer, who is sort of friend of this show via Twitter and appears on a lot of duckfeed.tv podcasts. What is the Dark Souls? Is it the haters blog he runs?
DarkSoulsHaters.tumblr.com, which is a collection of disgusting hate mail.
It's fantastic.
You shouldn't read it. You shouldn't. It's bad.
But he was, essentially, we were doing an all call looking for guests for this season, and I know Cole Ross was on our Metal Gear Solid 3 season, mm-hmm. So I was just pinging random folks that I like to listen to, and Jeremy, God bless his soul, retweeted that message, and then Patty discovered the show, and would you like to tell us how you binged through 40-plus episodes?
Well, yeah, no, I saw Jeremy pinging to ask Cole, and I was like, hang on, there's a Metal Gear show now? Ooh! Because, you know, I was thinking the other week, you know, I like Metal Gear a lot. You know, I did a full mm-hmm. run through the series before 5 came out, and I was like, yeah, I could listen to people talk about that for a while, definitely. So I searched it down, and I downloaded the first episode, and I banged through it, and I think I sent you a tweet almost immediately after mm-hmm. I finished it, going, hey, I really enjoyed that. That was fun. And then you invited me on. It was 3 hours from discovery to invite. I don't know. I kind of made me feel like a big shot, man.
we've got quick turnaround around here. So, no, I mean, truth be told, it's super weird. It's not until I kind of, poke my head out and realize what's going on, but, there are certain people online that I follow, and I feel like I've got this little, group of internet semi-celebrities that I like to enjoy. I enjoy looking at their Twitter accounts and listening to them on podcasts, and it's always so bizarre to me how easy it is to talk to folks like that, just out of the blue, you know what I mean? Because I don't know, it's a big deal for us, and it feels nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. Well, because as you alluded to, I have managed to binge through almost all of your show in, what, the 2 months since I discovered it? 2 months? Month and a half?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Since you were talking about recording Metal Gear 4, and I was like, oh, this is cool, I can get through this in time, right? And I haven't quite done
which,
it.
Yeah, which, I think total it's 72 hours or more.
Yeah, and I don't get a lot of podcast listening time. This is mostly walking to work and then walking back from work, an hour at a time. So I've been really just banging them in where I can, and on a day off, if I'm doing something where I don't have to listen to the gameplay, if I'm playing Peggle or something, I can just put you on and then listen, because I don't like playing games where you can hear people talk while I'm trying to listen to a podcast, because I just can't mm-hmm. focus, and I miss stuff, and I hate missing stuff. It's really bad. Mm-hmm. Over the last month and a half, you guys, you're family already. Your voice is in my head.
That's awesome. That's perfect. It just made all the year and a half of this show worthwhile to hear that. So thank you very much.
If you can make someone laugh, it's
sarcastically.
Worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so real quick too, just to give people a little bit of a background on yourself. Mm-hmm. How did you get introduced to Metal Gear? When did you get super interested in it? And when did it take hold? And
Oh, okay, yeah.
Suck you in completely.
Yeah, this is great. So I, like many people, was introduced to the series via the demo that came with the official PlayStation magazine. They were hyping it up for a long time, actually. Like, oh, this is going to be amazing. This is a sneaking game. And they had some of the Shinkawa art up as well. Like, what the hell is this? You know?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
In a time when every video and K character was, I have a big arm muscles, or my breasts are large. Those were the character traits that used to be. And it's like, this is cool secret agent, dude. This is kind of neat. And the demo came down, and it just, like, I think I played that thing probably 15 times. Just over and over and over. Just really enjoyed it. And then, yeah, after that, I actually didn't buy it for a while. Because when it came out, I was 12? Mm-hmm. Maybe 12? And I didn't quite have the money to go out and buy a brand new £40 game. You know, I didn't have that kind of money. I was 12. So what I ended up doing was maybe 6 months to a year later when it went out on Platinum, which was like the budget range where they bring out the classic games that sell so much that have been out for a year. They bring it out for £20.
Yeah.
I did well out of
that.
Yeah,
I think it's like Greatest Hits. Greatest Hits.
There you go. Yeah. That's exactly what we did. So I went to my local dodgy trading shop and I traded it. This is the greatest trade I've ever done. I traded the Fantastic Four side-scrolling arcade game. It's... no, it gets worse. And I traded Rascal for the PS1.
What?
That fucking game. I have completely forgotten about that game.
With his little
the old backwards
shooter.
Ball cap.
Yeah.
Fucking,
it was terrible.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Game's awful.
It's the worst thing I've played. And, like, even thinking back, it's probably the worst game I think I've ever played.
It's pretty awful.
And I did a good job because what I did is I traded them for the best game I have ever played.
Yeah.
And then
well, and so that's the thing.
Yeah,
that's the thing I wanted to talk to you a little bit about as well. So I know that we sort of did like a which is your favorite Metal Gear question on a listener response episode not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And I think I talked to you about this on Twitter a little bit, but it seems like so Metal Gear Solid 1, like above and beyond, is like your favorite.
It's,
I've gathered.
Absolutely. It's the easy answer to the question. My second favorite is much harder to pick. But the first one, because I played it so many times, I took a summer. It was a summer holiday. And yeah, as we've alluded to, I'm quite a pasty boy, so I like to stay indoors. And I think I went through Metal Gear Solid 1 again. I think it was like between 10 and 15 times, definitely. I just played it and played it and played it. I couldn't get enough. I loved it. I didn't particularly speed run it or anything. I wasn't trying to kind of do cool guy tricks and stuff. I just really enjoyed playing it. You know, I just really enjoyed just the act of running around and calling people on the codec and shooting goddamn Nikita missiles at stuff. It was just fun. And that once that had happened, that was me done. You know, that's every Metal Gear that's been out since. I've been jumping on it as and when. I have a stupid, not a terribly big collection, but one or two key pieces that are pretty impressive.
That's awesome.
I've got strategy guides. I've got some of the art books. I've got some of the soundtrack CDs. I've been making a papercraft Metal Gear Rex recently.
Plans
that came out with Metal Gear Solid 3, I think. And I had these things for like 10 years, and I finally printed them out a few weeks ago, and I've built one, and it's gorgeous. It's this little Rex now that sits up there. I've also got a 6-foot-tall fiberglass statue of Big Boss.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
6 foot tall? Is it like the MGS3 one?
It is. It's one of the promo models they sent out to shores.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My wife, or at the time, my girlfriend, Laura, it's just, we sort of talked about it, like, oh, that's a really cool thing. I'd love to have one of those. And then she got it for me as a combined kind of birthday, Christmas, anniversary, everything this year present. But it only cost her about £200, which is not that much, really.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because I could probably...
Do you ever, are you ever wandering around your house late at night and you mistake it for a human being?
Oh, a bit. Well, it's in the spare room now. It's in the reading room.
Good.
When I was at university, when she got it to me, it was set up next to the bed. So I'd wake up in the night and go, oh, yeah. Or when I'd move my room around, I'd put it out in the corridor, walk past, see it, absolutely cack myself, and then remember. My mum wouldn't let me have it in the house when I moved home after uni. She insisted on putting it in the garage.
Oh, yeah. She didn't, like, yeah, I would assume. Yeah, my mother would probably be like, what? No, this isn't happening.
This is from what now? So,
yeah, who? He eats what? Excuse me? But
Solid
yes.
Snake sounds fishy.
So,
since we are in Metal Gear Solid 4, before we dive into sort of this section of the game properly, I did want to kind of talk to you about your experience with this particular game.
Mm-hmm.
So being a fan of the first Metal Gear, how were you feeling sort of like the first time that you played MGS4 and like started to kind of dig and get into it sort of further along? I mean, because to some extent, like this feels like a direct sequel to the first Metal Gear in a lot of ways.
I mean, you're probably right. It feels like a sequel to 1, 2, and 3 in different ways and in different places. It feels like a direct follow-on, like some of the ideas from 2, some of the kind of the setup from 1, you know, and the stuff we'll get to in a little bit from 3. You know, it feels like a direct sequel to all of them. It's really trying to tie in as many ends as it can, and it feels like a sort of an evolution of the series, but like a complete one. The thing I've always liked about Metal Gear is while each game, you know, takes that sort of core stealth gameplay, but it changes it so much between each game, but they still feel like Metal Gear.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'd say particularly this one, because this one is so... Like, MGS4, I felt like at the time, felt so far past all the other games from a gameplay and like technical standpoint, but it was like mind-blowing how much it still felt like Metal Gear.
Oh, of course. And I it's something that actually helped me. So there was a version that came out in the UK of Metal Gear 4, a special edition that came with a Bluetooth headset. And the Bluetooth headset is kind of that Metal Gear Mark II, that sort of Rex style of sort of shape. If you pair it up while you're playing the game, and if you have it on, when Otacon calls you when you're out in the game, it comes through on the headset.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's so cool.
Oh, man. Is that just that headset?
I think it works with every headset, but that's the only one I ever had for the PS3. And I just, it was
that's crazy.
Phenomenally good. Like, oh my God, it's him. He's in my actual ear.
Well, I'm so like, my wife goes to bed way earlier than I do. So typically like game time for me is like the last 2 hours of the night, roughly 2 or 3 hours or whatever, or like early mornings. And so I'm so used to like with the PS4 being able to like plug things into the headphone jack on the controller that whenever I went back through to play MGS4, it literally drove me nuts that there was like no way for me to kind of incognito listen to the audio without waking everyone up in the house.
Did you have to do that thing where it's like, oh, I have to stand up and walk over to the TV and
like
plug in
to the TV.
Plug in my headphones and then walk back like an animal?
Yeah, it was awful. But I remember trying to pair up a Bluetooth headset, and like the PS3 just won't push game audio through it.
Nah.
So it was like the weirdest thing. So like that must be like an MGS4 specific thing. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's only like because it doesn't happen as much as you think. So I had this damn thing on for the whole game, and it's maybe happened 4 times. And it's not comfy.
That's amazing.
It's not ergonomic. Yeah. It is not comfy. It's a blob sitting on the side of your ear, pulling your ear down the entire time. But it's worth it when it kicks in. Like, ah, yes, 5 hours.
Woo. That's amazing. Well, cool. So getting into where we are currently in our journey along Metal Gear Solid 4.
Ooh, do I get to do the song? Can I do the song?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you would.
Oh, my God.
What song?
The honors are yours.
I'm really happy to say that it's time for Fumbling in the Dark with Isaac Lim.
Oh, my gosh.
Take it away, Isaac. That was beautiful.
In the recent ones segments, I've actually researched what we did.
Oh no! Oh no! Did you just tell everybody that you've been lying to us this whole time?
It's not fumbling on game FAQs,
so,
Isaac Lim.
No, I had a revelation, and I said, "All right, this time I'm not going to look back and remember what we did." So this is all from memory, guys.
Okay,
gosh,
from the dome.
Oh, this is going to be like OG fumbling. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. We're back to season one fumbling.
This is exciting.
So, let's see. Last time, we talked to another English man, and he helped us walk through South America, maybe?
South Beach?
South.
That Los Angeles?
Local. What did we do? Calendar. All right, so we went to a mansion. I remember there being a mansion somewhere in South America. Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
So far, you're actually like,
this is good.
You're doing well. Yeah,
perfect.
It's weird. I think we need to rename this segment. Like, Isaac has short-term memory problems.
because it's really weird to me that it's like it's been 7 days and like, well, I guess for like that episode in particular, it's been like 2 weeks.
2 weeks,
for us, but
man,
oh man,
man,
oh man.
Oh, I know. We also were looking for Naomi, and that's the extent of. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll fill in some gaps.
Did we find
Naomi. Yeah, we absolutely found her. And then we rescued her while a Romanian and a pretty boy had a breakdown sword fighting competition in the middle of the street.
That was
pretty much it. But,
can I just cut in? That breakdancing sword fight is the coolest thing.
Yeah, It's insane. Like, I think we talked about this a little bit in the episode, but like, I just don't understand whose brain can choreograph that.
Yeah, it's pretty
like to
bizarre.
A T. Like, it's just the weirdest. It just reminds me of kids like drawing like in their notebooks during class, like crazy stick figure fights or like a Newgrounds animation or something.
Yeah.
It's like who choreographs these bizarro like sword dancing contests?
You've never seen Kojima's Newgrounds videos?
That's that would be phenomenal, actually. Apparently there's a Lego character based off of Kojima that is now like canon to the Lego universe.
Huh.
So thank you for that. It has like a little goatee and some sunglasses.
Aww.
It's pretty wonderful. But anyway, yes, Isaac, you did a very good job. I'm happy to report that there are some items in my refrigerator that take longer to spoil than your memory of Metal Gear.
I promise I don't do this on purpose.
Oh, it's totally fine.
But
we
can see you're trying, though. You're trying.
Yeah, I can hear the like veins tightening in your forehead.
Well, see, whenever you mention these little snippets, everything just comes back to me. So
that's true. It's like a ripcord.
Yeah.
It just all comes.
I just need a little prodding.
Ah, I see. It's good. It's the same excuse I gave all my teachers in grade school, but it's good.
I'll get there.
Well, very nice. So on this week's episode, we are going to be covering Act 3 of Metal Gear Solid 4, which is called... kind of anticlimactically Third Son, and covers a fun little trip excursion to Europe, which we will be talking about now. So away we go. We're going to talk about this mission briefing, so we are going back to this Nomad. How did you guys... Because no other game in the series has these sort of like weird briefing interludes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys dig these, or do you get like so lost in the weeds with all the buttons that you can press? Like, are you like super ADD throughout these entire...
I'm pretty overwhelmed.
Or do you...
I mean, there's a lot going on, but if you start getting bored, you can just drive a little robot around.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, I'm getting bored. I'm going to go on an adventure.
Yeah, I'm just going to start slamming people's shins as hard as I can.
Battery hunting.
Which gives you unlocks.
Yeah.
Like, they give you incentive to ram people with the Mark II.
That is my entire aim, every one of these things, is get the Mark II out and just see who goes past and just run at them. Anyone that moves, you know, I think Raiden's laying on like on a bench during this one, and I sat there watching him, just watching him, like, move, let me hit you.
That's what I imagine the Mark II that's sitting on the desk for the second part of this briefing. I imagine it's just looking at everyone waiting for some shins to get exposed. But yeah, so before our actual briefing, we've got a little bit of an eggy interlude with Sonny doing some more eggs and singing the periodic table, I believe. From top to bottom, and Naomi comes in, and we have this entire scene of Naomi and Sunny kind of doing this whole sort of big sister, little sister, mother figure-esque discussion, I guess, for lack of a better phrase.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird.
It's super weird.
Yeah, it felt very stilted. Like, the writing felt kind of cringy at times. I don't know. It's like I get like Kojima and team, like you guys should probably just stick to like the gruff military men that you guys know, because like the girl talk at the kitchen sink just felt very like oddly put together.
Just talk about nanomachines every now and again. You should cook these eggs because we're girls. And by the way, nanomachines.
Yeah. We're girls. We should look good. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was like a direct line.
That's the line. Us girls have to look our best, which I actually found quite kind of like when some Naomi stuff starts unraveling later. I actually found that quite a sort of personal thing for her.
Oh, but that's true.
Putting on that face, you know, like, oh, no, we have to look, you know, like everything's fine.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I like that. I was true. Like, ooh, subtle.
Yeah, huh. Yeah, and I will say this, too. It's, like, specific things, and I'm going to go ahead and say that this act in particular is going to shine a light on, like, a lot of things that feel odd at first. Like, for instance, like, Sonny's speech impediment is about to get addressed, which I thought was very interesting. I'd completely forgotten about it. And so when it reared its ugly head up in the scene here in a little bit, I was actually like, wow, that's a really interesting sort of take. So anyway, so yeah, so Naomi and Sonny are kind of doing these cooking lessons and talking about, I don't know, just kind of bonding. One of the things that I thought was great was one of the little like duck figurines from Metal Gear Solid 3 and like the original Metal Gear Online is the cooking timer. It's pretty good. And essentially, Sonny and Naomi kind of have this bonding moment, and Naomi gives Sonny this like pretty little flower behind her ear, and they kind of talk about how Olga's not around to kind of be her mother. And the whole sequence is like this whole like build up 30-minute briefing is just Naomi talking about people's relatives and then finding out that they're dead and then apologizing. Like back to back.
Oh my god.
So yeah, she's pretty inconsiderate and mean, but she didn't know any better, so it's fine.
Naomi, the walking embodiment of the awkward penguin meme.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm surprised that she wasn't like, Snake, you look great for being pregnant, and Snake's like, I'm not pregnant. What are you playing? I half expected that, but
oh my gosh.
But yeah, it's pretty good. Moving sort of along into the actual briefing, we've got a little bit of this like big boss liquid and solid snake DNA lesson here at the beginning, which for I guess all intents and purposes, like we already knew most of this. They're kind of reiterating that like all three of them are similar but different enough, which is why like the original Fox die could target liquid without killing solid and vice versa. Mm-hmm.
And that we did know that. That was one of the key points at the end of Metal Gear 1.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, how is Snake still alive after the events?
Because he got all his flawed recessive genes.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I could do that voice because, like, in my mind, I have so many funny quotes that would be perfect in that voice,
it's
but I don't even
bad,
want to attempt it.
But it is a bad British accent, though.
It is really bad.
Because none of us talk like this. Except when we're on the radio.
I really wish that we just need to slowly get more and more British folks to start using that voice until, like, suddenly it is just the norm.
Fumbling in the dark with Isaac Lim.
That's hilarious.
That's pretty great. Yeah. When that being said, too, and I cannot remember his name, who voices Liquid. Oh, man, what is his name?
Cam Clark? Was that it?
No, I'm trying to think. Maybe. Yeah, I think you might be right. Well, so he also voices the male blood elf from World of Warcraft. So there are a lot of really weird, like, vocal lines in that style. Because he's essentially still Liquid.
Yeah.
But he's saying things about, like, glory to the Sunwell or whatever the hell they say in those games. But
oh, it's Cam Clark. I was anyway. Right. It's Cam Clark.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't know why in my head I was confusing Cam Clark for Quentin Flynn, who's Raiden's voice actor, but anyway, there are a lot of really fun flashbacks in this sequence, specifically when Naomi's talking about the DNA. It's super funny because the flashback is just Liquid being like, we're not copies of our father. just like the vocal line just kind of comes out of nowhere. And there are a couple of these like ham-fisted vocal lines kind of as we go. Like towards the end, there's a very specific one with Vulcan Raven where I was like, fucking nobody has played this far, and still in the back of their head is like, what does he mean, Eastern blood? so it's kind of, yeah, it's weird. But they, again, like Patty had mentioned at the top of the episode, there are a lot of loose ends getting tied up in the next like 3 hours of this game. Yeah. So. Did you guys slam Otacon with the Mark II?
No.
Yeah. Well, everyone.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you say slam the shins, so, I actually make the robot stand up. I use the up button and makes the robot extend up.
What?
So you can slam him in the ass.
That's good to know.
Oh my gosh.
I'm literally going to start doing that. Stick to my just trusty, like, punch him in the genitals and just start using the Mark II to just
whip him out.
Slam them. Yeah.
My problem is, I need to concentrate on what they're talking about, and if I start using the Mark II, I'm like, I get too distracted with things.
Yeah, that happened to me actually in this briefing sequence, and I actually had to like verify part of the first section of the briefing on YouTube after I got done,
because
I was
fun.
Like, I totally fucking forgot what everybody was talking about.
See, I can just see Snake sitting at the end of the couch just playing with the robot. Like, right, ready to go. It's like, wait, what? What are we doing?
Where are we? What's going on?
We're after what now?
But yeah, so you can get Otacon's face camo if you slam into him, which is why I bring it up.
I'm going to get your face from your ass.
Which is super fun for the next part of the game, where you can kind of be dressed up like this like film noir like detective with Otacon's face if you want, which is great. The only thought I could think of while this whole scene was kind of playing through was that Sunny's in the background using like 7 keyboards and like 4 computer monitors. And you just see like windows opening and closing all over the monitors. And I'm just like, what the fuck is she doing? That's not how human beings use computers.
Hacking.
So I'm not quite sure what's happening. But essentially we get a little bit of, to not go crazy in depth on this specific portion. We essentially get our kind of, big bad guy and the reason for it through this. So essentially what we're being told is that the genetic code for Big Boss is being utilized by or the plot is for Liquid to utilize that to take control of the entire system, which I wasn't quite able to wrap my head around why Big Boss's genetic material can access SOP other than it was part of Naomi's like failsafe proprietary sort of program that she built. I don't know if I just like missed a couple lines of dialogue, but I was kind of confused as to like why it's specifically Big Boss's genetic material that can get people access.
Well, in the Metal Gear universe, Big Boss is basically Jesus, so
that's true.
It's like if someone
he
wanted to access it,
Jesus.
Yeah, if we're gonna let anyone in, let him in.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's true. I think everybody in the military in the Metal Gear universe just always make sure that Big Boss is the admin username and password for all for all computers, just in case he needs it. You know what I mean? So, anyway, and then Naomi just drops a bomb that blew my hair back because I'd completely forgotten about this. But she was like, "Big Boss's body is still alive." Everyone in the Nomad was like, "Say what?" And she essentially says, like, oh, he's a vegetable, and essentially he's brain dead, but they do have his body, and it's still, like, functioning, which sounds very expensive, was the first thought that I had.
she called it she said he's a biomort, which is,
that's what she referred to. Yeah, she just drops that word out, and then we never hear it again. And everyone in the Nomad's like, oh, yeah, biomort, yeah, duh, of course. But yeah, and then essentially we're told that like Liquid is trying to find the body of Big Boss in Europe and grab it, and so Snake has to stop him, which we had kind of alluded to on the last episode, and Raiden kind of comes to just long enough to also be like, oh yeah, do that, and then they're like, okay, cool. Besides that, Sunny exclaims that she was able to like hack AT security and the Patriots, and she says that she found it, and yet at the same time I'm not really like, if everyone in the room has agreed that we should go to this European country to find this body, it feels kind of weird that every
secondary characters just chiming in with, oh yeah, by the way, you guys should probably go to Europe. It's like, okay, well, yeah, we got it. Like, Europe.
Well, they're giving everyone stuff to do, aren't they?
Yeah,
you know, big boss has got liquid to find. They've got to find some blood for Raiden.
Yep, they need more artificial blood. And so this kind of draws me to my biggest, like, what the fuck moment. And it's a little confusing to me, but essentially after we get through this kind of monologue where Otacon's talking about how, like, PMCs are, like, forcing the scientific community to become, like, these immoral kind of scientist, all the while he's, like, side-eyeing Naomi. Essentially, Naomi and Sunny have this conversation about Raiden's blood and how he needs this dialysis, but the biggest thing was that all of a sudden, tying the original Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 into sort of post-Metal Gear territory, Raiden just casually name drops that Dr. Madnar can fix him and that he's located in Eastern Europe. And Snake should know that name very well, and yet Snake does not even register anything. It was the weirdest thing. Like, no one, they're all just like, oh, okay, this guy, Eastern Europe, great, let's do it. And I was just like, I don't, Snake, you've personally, like, had conversations with this man and duplicates of this man and, like, stopped this man multiple times. Like, why are you not asking how he's still alive?
Well, Big Boss is alive still. Everyone's still alive. Yeah, no one's really dead.
That's true. At this point, Snake's just, like, trying to get his cigarette, and he doesn't care about anything else. That's the plot device that I'm going to use, is that Snake just wants to smoke. But again, he gets shut down, and his psych meter goes down yet again and makes the fun little sound. Yep. And then we smash cut into Otacon typing like a madman with a picture of his sister, Emma, pulled up. And this is where Naomi...
number two.
Kind of...
This is weird.
Yeah, this is number two. Yeah, it was... So to kind of lay the scene for folks that are kind of listening and haven't been able to play, it's this weird moment where Naomi takes the sort of USB drive that she had around her neck that we had seen prior with her kind of duplicating Snake's biological data when we were in South America. She, like, takes it off of her necklace and, like, goes as if she's, like, going to talk to Otacon about, like, giving it to him.
Mm-hmm.
But she has this kind of, like, should she give it to Sunny? Should she give it to Otacon? Kind of, like, situation, because he keeps talking about how, like, Sunny's the real brains of the outfit, but Sunny's sleeping. Otacon's kind of talking about how emotionally hurt he is that his sister is dead, and, like, Naomi kind of keeps going back and forth, but then never makes a decision and kind of ultimately just, like, puts it back on her necklace, and it feels very, I don't know, it's an odd moment.
Oh, see, that's interesting, because I read this bit, I read this different, and maybe the game will contradict me later, because I haven't played this in a very long time, so I'm only up to date where we are. I saw that as Naomi trying to plug that into one of their computers to either plant something or take something. I see her double agent, and she's trying to sort of talk, and maybe she can't quite get the opening, which is why they're being awkward and kind of walking back and forward. And it's like, he's still looking at me. He's still looking at me. He's not going to sleep. He's going to stay up all night typing. God damn.
Yeah.
Freaking nerds, man.
I never even thought about it. Like,
nerds,
that's,
man.
That's a good point, yeah.
That's how I read it, because she's shady as shit, man.
Yeah, she is super shady. Though I will say the entire time. So, again, Otacon and Naomi clearly have some sort of, like, feelings for each other. And there's this just very awkward tension in the air where, now that you mentioned the point that you make, Patty, I'm curious as to whether or not, like, it's awkward tension for Naomi because she doesn't want to do this, even though it will help her achieve her goal. And Otacon might genuinely have feelings. I don't know if they both genuinely have feelings. But either way, there's, like, on top of this USB thumb drive situation that's happening, and Otacon kind of opening up about his personal life, Naomi and Otacon are doing this very awkward, like, are we going to kiss? We're not going to kiss. There's interruptions. We're getting very close to each other's mouths. Now we're not. Snake's secretly awake and watching us.
He
and
gets all
creepy.
Wound up and says the word scienceholics, like, three times. It's like, dude,
yeah,
stop saying scienceholics. That's not a real word.
Yeah, you've been on 4chan for too long. Stop. It's super weird. But then finally,
And the whole time I was like, oh man, Otacon blew it. And my favorite part is just like at the end, Naomi like pulls him into the helicopter and just like closes the door. And I was like, fuck yeah, Otacon. Like, good for you. Good for
good
you.
Good job
guys.
Having sex with someone that's not your stepmother. Go on, man.
Yeah, right? Right?
Yeah, you did it.
Yep. But yeah, so besides that, I think one other thing that I wanted to point out that actually kind of cracked me up was like, Emma, so EE's picture is up on the screen and it's like her MGS2 model like screenshot, and Naomi is doing her awkward like, oh, I thought that was your girlfriend, and Otacon's like, quit twisting the knife in my back, she's dead. The thing that I find the funniest is that Otacon was like, and then Vamp killed her. And this is the thing that I love about the Metal Gear universe is that you can fucking name drop the first name of somebody who killed your family member, and everyone's like, oh shit, not Vamp. And it's like, oh, I'm
Hang
great
on.
I'm glad that there's 30 people.
Whoa. Okay, here's my question to you then, Alessio. What's Vamp's surname?
Salat? Vamp's Salat? I don't know.
Vamp?
I don't know.
Acula.
Yeah.
Acula.
Ire? His last name is Ire. Vampire.
Yes.
I don't know.
Does
My
he
name
have
is,
but yeah,
Nito,
and I,
incog Nito. Yes. They'll never find me.
Well, and I get it. Like, I understand. Like, Naomi knows who Vamp is. Otacon knows who Vamp is. I get it. But I saw an opening to like poke fun at Metal Gear in a way that like people poke fun at Star Wars, which is like everyone is connected. But
Luke,
anyway,
which Luke? There's 400 of them. Oh, the magic one. Oh, the magic one. Say magic Luke next time.
The giant Luke. Yeah.
Lukeulon.
But yeah, so please, everybody, put your pitchforks away. I also love Metal Gear. I'm just taking the piss, you guys, okay?
Oh.
Yep, I'm also reappropriating cultural shorthand. So come at me, guys. Come at me. There was one really, really, really weird sort of thing. So when they Naomi and Otacon kind of discussed Sonny's background. So we've understood that Raiden rescued Sonny from the Patriots for Olga. Like, that's been said. However, the extra sort of wrinkle that we hear here is that while Sonny is sleeping, Otacon mentions to Naomi that the reason why Sonny sort of has like a speech impediment and the reason why she's kind of socially awkward and very intelligent and knows how to use a computer super well is because the entire time that she was in the possession of the Patriots, her entire life was on the net. So she like exclusively was just online all the time and had like no window into the outside world. Mm-hmm. So essentially we see this, 10, 11, 12 year old girl, who was essentially raised by the internet, which sounds like a fucking terrible social experiment.
But let's be fair, that is how children are raised these days.
That's true. iPads raise the world.
Yep.
So,
but like, okay, so here's the thing. So they say she's not been outside, like, in the real world yet. So they've had her for a little while at this point, right?
What do they do?
Open the back door of the plane when they land. They gotta land every now and again. Just let her out.
Nope.
Where does she pee? I don't understand. Like, where does she eat food? Do they only they like? She's a bubble
eggs,
girl.
Man.
Do they, it's like John Travolta from the 70s.
Just rations and eggs. That's all they get. Rations and eggs.
That's it.
Yeah, rations and eggs. That sounds horrible. Everyone's cholesterol's through the fucking roof in that airplane.
I bet it smells
but yeah, so anyway,
as well.
Oh God! Can you imagine what the bathroom smells like at the Nomad?
Jeez, just the because Snake's old now, so his old man farts are even worse.
Oh, no. There's like little egg explosions silently.
Maybe that's why he's always smoking. He's trying to light a match, get rid of the methane in the air.
I like that. I like that a lot. But yeah, so then Hal says some very creepy shit. No, Naomi says it, which is, quote, she hasn't even been born yet. She's still in the womb. And there's just something weird about... there could totally be a sitcom where it's Sonny and her two dads. But B, besides the awkward sitcom of being raised by a geriatric and a scientist, it seems like she's in some sort of mechanical womb now as well. So, yes. And for some reason, and Patty, I know that you've been... in the midst of this chokehold on your life as well. But the moment she said that, it was just immediately my mind thought of the weird mechanical womb from the newly released Nier Automata.
Ooh, yeah.
So I had that picture in my brain.
Ooh.
But quite good.
Ooh.
That's a quite good game.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good game.
It's a quite good game. But yes, did you guys notice the chickens that are named Liquid and Solid, by the way,
yeah,
in the cutscene? My mind blew.
There's a Solidus as well. You can find them when you're running around with the Mark II earlier. You can see there's a Solidus up top.
No.
Yep.
Oh, no. So we got snakes named Liquid, Solid, and Solidus. Now we got chickens named Liquid, Solid, and Solidus. We got grown men with these names. Ugh. Okay. So, yes, that concludes our briefing. Hal and Naomi forever. We begin Act 3, Part 1. Yes, so as we mentioned, it's Third Son, because they ran out of snake names, I guess, and didn't want to use Solidus Son. We're at a European train platform. Does anybody remember what goddamn country we're supposed to be in? Because I can't quite make out where this is.
Europe.
It's just generic Europe.
Yeah, Europe is a country. I mean,
yeah,
England isn't part of that anymore.
Oh, no, you're right. England is a different country.
2016 vote, people of the world. Good job.
Yeah, my heart goes out to all of you guys. Hey, at least you guys don't have a fucking clown running your country shooting missiles.
Yeah.
Woo! Yay.
We've got a different clown who's being like, good job.
Clowns aside.
Okay, so, yeah, in terms of which country it is, I was really paying attention to this because I sort of think, hang on, where are we? And I was trying to guess it. I think they keep it vague intentionally because in Act 1, they're in the Middle East. In Act 2, they're in South America.
Oh, that's true.
At least they're in Europe. So that way, they can't pin it on any particular country being full of bad people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I noticed, having spent a considerable amount of time in Europe in the early part of my life, I've noticed there are quite a lot of things that reminded me of, like, France. Specifically, they were, like, very Paris-style sort of side streets and stuff.
See,
I thought
I thought Germany, but then they say it's Eastern Europe, and that's like the Albania sort of side.
Yeah, because that's the thing too, is when they said Eastern Europe, because to me it definitely reminded me of Germany, it reminded me of France, it reminded me of Italy. But when they said Eastern Europe, I wasn't sure if Eastern Europe is where Raiden was taken and Snake was dropped off in a different part of Europe. But yeah, I've actually not been any farther east than like Amsterdam, so I'm not sure where the hell this could be. My volume was so low at one point that I was hoping somebody would be speaking in like a native tongue that I could hear, but it was just English very quietly. So we're
in one of the countries that vote for each other during the Eurovision Song Contest. That bit of the world.
Yes.
I'm not upset.
Likewise, there is mention. We'll get into it in a little bit, but there is mention of, quote, the president, and yet, like, president of what country? Like, what the fuck are we talking about? So there are a lot of just, like, generic, very general terms being thrown around, which is weird coming from a series that gets, like, almost, like, autistic detail-oriented about very strange, specific details. But yes. Anyway. So what's gone on here, just to kind of set the scene a little bit, is we are sort of opening in this like train depot. It is the United States PMC Raven Sword is declaring a state of emergency to root out local resistance in this generic Europe. And the Raven Sword is actually part of the Outer Heaven sort of PMC group. They are targeting the resistance. Actually has a name in this country as opposed to just the militia. Here the resistance is referred to as Paradise Lost Army.
But they only mention it here, and they never say it again.
Yeah, it's super weird.
But it's really clever. Like,
yeah,
when you learn why.
I dig
that's
it.
Clever. That's genius.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, and then just say it again. Like, say it. It's clever.
Well, and so I'm sure we'll address it on the listener responses, but like we had a listener write in, and the name is totally escaping me, but I will read the entire message once we do our side op. But we had listener response write in and ask about sort of what some of the biblical imagery that's going to happen a little bit later. So between this Paradise Lost kind of like Milton reference and then like the biblical kind of imagery later on, I think my take is just sort of like this shit sounded and looked cool. I don't really know if there's like any sort of greater symbolism kind of woven throughout the game. I think it's one of those things where like almost like Westerners are like, oh, check out this cool kanji tattoo I got. It's like, I feel like Japanese game devs were like, check out these cool Western religious imagery symbols.
And it's a picture of Batman.
That would be amazing. I would kill for that. But yeah, so it's kind of confusing because we hear about the Paradise Lost Army's Big Mama is hiding Big Boss, and Big Mama has Big Boss, and we've got to go to Big Mama to talk to Big Boss. And in all this, like, I'm sure Snake's just like, why am I not Big Snake? But yeah, so small snakes aside, Snake has to lie about his identity to get into the country, which the camera throughout these cutscenes is just like intentionally obscuring Snake's face for a reason that I really dug when it happens. Essentially, he has to get through this like PMC security checkpoint and for obvious reasons is afraid to walk through the sort of like the weird metal detector that scans your bones or whatever the hell they have set up. These PMC boys are very beefy, I also noticed. Compared to the other PMC boys that we've dealt with, these guys all look like Gears of War men. Like, they look like they just are made out of meat flanks.
Well, Ravensword's one of the US ones, aren't they? And they're all like, you know, I think of a US Marine, I think of a beefy boy.
I think of Chef Boyardee when I think of the U.S. Marine, and I don't know why.
just a thick meat boy.
Just a super meat boy.
Oh my god.
But yeah, so there's this very strange kind of like push and pull situation where like clearly the character that is meant to be Snake, again, we've not seen his face, but the character that is meant to be Snake is like, he's next in line for the x-ray and they're like, come on through. And he's just like not doing anything. And they're like, are you stupid? And he still doesn't do anything. Then he tries to light a cigarette indoors and people aim guns at his face. And then Meryl's like, no, the mute cigarette weirdo is friends with me. Let him come on through. And then they're like, okay. So Meryl kind of comes to the rescue.
What was his plan? Put on a mask and then... Is that because he wasn't listening to the briefing and we were playing with the robot?
Yeah,
you know what we're doing, right, Snake? Yeah.
Even during the briefing, though, they're just like, yeah, like I think so it's Roy's voice. Roy Campbell's voice is playing, which Roy wasn't even there for the briefing. But Roy's voice is playing through the cutscene. And it says, like, we've made arrangements to get you through. You know what to do. But instead, he just, like, awkwardly stands at, like, the customs line.
Oh, I can just see Roy just watching and going, we set him a vent up. There's a vent over there. We told him about the vent three times. And he said, yes, the vent. Why is he not? He's just stood there. Go through the vent, dumbass.
He forgot. But yeah, so then the camera pulls out once Meryl has kind of pulled Snake aside to reveal what's going on, and it's pretty fucking cool. So Snake is wearing the face camo that he got from Laughing Octopus to make his face look like young Snake.
God, Snake, you dumb, dumb bastard. He's already seen like, that face camo can be anyone, so he chose me, but harder.
yeah, right? Let's take it back to the glory days.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you effectively from this point in the game, you unlock both non-bandana young Snake and bandana young Snake, but you can't use the bandana version unless you are in like battle gear. So during this next portion of the game, you'll be in like civilian clothing to try and like sneak around and blend in.
Coat Snake.
But yeah, it's Coat Snake. It's almost like it reminds me of Zenigata, the detective from Lupin the Third.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that outfit. Kind of like minus the hat, like he just kind of has this like I don't know, it's like this weird, it reminds me of like I'm trying to think, it reminds me of like Fritz Lang's M or like some of these like weird like 30s and 40s kind of like detective movies.
It kind of has that tone too, like the it's really the environment seems very muted, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Kind of dark and just kind of washed out, black, white.
Yeah, and it's, I guess it's supposed to be raining, but I've noticed that, like, I could only tell on my television whenever you would look at a street light, you could see, like, what looked like some raindrops kind of falling, but it looked like this kind of weird, like, digital overlay rain.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I only noticed it when the camera was kind of close to someone's face and their face would start to shimmer. Like, why is their face shimmering? Is that the Octo camera fail? Oh, no, it's rain.
Yeah, it was very strange. So, anyway, yeah, and in the midst of all this, Meryl and Snake are talking while the PMCs are still kind of, like, freaked out by Snake. And Johnny Suzuki from across the courtyard is just like, Snake, over here, Snake.
I swear to God.
Like, what are you doing? Like, and then even Snake's like, what's his problem? So it's super bizarre, just the whole thing.
Johnny,
and Meryl's just like face palming.
Fuck. He's such a dumb fuck. Like, guys, now we're going to try and sneak him through, right? No one needs to know he's Snake. Snake! Wave! Look, it's Snake, everyone!
Yeah, it's super bizarre. And I still don't understand why the things that happened to Johnny, but it'll happen. It'll unfold like a train wreck in front of us soon. But yeah, so this is where Meryl name drops the president. Meryl's just like, yeah, I've been talking to the president. And Snake's like, tell me more. And like, that's like, it's just like, okay. And they're talking about, like, Snake wants to do the old, like, I'm a renegade secret agent and I'm going to kill Liquid because it's me doing right. And
I'm
Meryl's like,
wet work.
Yeah. And Meryl's like, no, we have to do this by the book. I told the president. He's going to help us out. And Snake's like, I don't want to talk to the president. And, like, that's pretty much the conversation.
One time the president was my brother.
Yeah. It's right? He was. But, yeah, so essentially it's just, like, this weird, like, how are we going to defeat Liquid? And then Meryl gets, like, real personal about it, which is, like, very upsetting to me. Like, so right before then, Meryl's just like, hey, like, your cause is our cause now. Like, you don't have to do this. And then Snake chimes in with his, like, I'm no hero monologue that he just has written, like, pre-written and just, like, busts out at any given moment. But Meryl essentially just, like, starts talking shit about his age and his, like, approach. She's like, get out of here, old man. You're slowing everybody down. And it's just like, oh, man, like, you didn't have to do that. Like, that's upsetting. So I think she even gets that it's upsetting because, like, as she turns to leave, she just has this, like, very – I wonder if she told him that just to, like, keep him away. I don't know. The whole thing's very somber. It's sad. But anyway, maybe I'm the one who's reading too much into, like, old Snake's plight, but – I feel bad for the man. But yeah, so then we're sort of approached with what we should be doing, which is Otacon hits us up over Kodak and says, hey, you got to get to Big Mama and Big Boss fast. The PMCs have added, like, Snake's new face to the blacklist, so, like, be careful. Streets are under curfew. Only Resistance and PMC folks are out and about. And essentially says, like, hey, you have this, like, signal interceptor item that we're giving you, which you can use to, like, hijack the PMC's, like, data and, like, voice lines. And, like, Madnar is treating Raiden, so everything's a-okay and, like, be fine. And then we're just kind of, like, cut loose into this, like, generic European, like, stone street, like, I don't know, like, courtyard, downtown area of just, like, generic European major city. At dusk with the rain and our trench coat.
So I have a question to ask of Isaac particularly.
Oh, man.
So, the outfit you're wearing, did you change it in any way?
Honestly, I haven't even gone into the... Is it the camouflage menu that you do all this in?
Yep.
Does that answer your question? I have not.
Isaac's not pressed start this entire time.
Wait, there's a map?
You guys have been saving your game? I've been playing up until this point every week.
I've just been stopping.
I did,
standing still.
I did have that revelation once about saving.
So I didn't, when I first did this bit, I didn't know you could just put on your camo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, change it back.
I guess you can just take everything off.
Yeah, and then when I watch, like, you know, YouTube videos of people doing it, they just immediately change to the Octocam. I'm like, wait, you can just do that?
Yeah.
Because I've played this whole section as Co-Oticon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I didn't really...
It's just better.
The civilian clothing doesn't really do anything. It doesn't hide you from being seen or anything. So it seems kind of pointless.
So I used a little bit of a trick here, and I'm going to go ahead and tip my hat to, I think it was Red Stang on our Slack channel. Adam had mentioned that if you wear the laughing octopus mask, that like nobody gives a shit about anything. Huh. So really? I literally just had, like, the laughing octopus mask at all times, and, like, all of the PMCs are just like, oh, hey, what's up?
What?
See ya. And I'm
Wait,
like, okay.
So, clearly, a woman on a boy body.
Yes.
This is fine.
Like, a dead woman on a 6'4" man woman, like, man body.
Didn't she have tentacles?
Well, what's weird is, like, her mask, if you look at the way that Snake looks when he's wearing it, it's clearly, like, a man's head wrapped with, like, black with, like, somebody having, like, put, like, a model woman head on top of his head.
Yeah, it's got like, kind of, like, back, collar, isn't it, that goes up a little bit.
Yeah, it's really weird looking.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I just did that for safety. So, like, I still kept the civilian clothes on, and I had the trank pistol, and I was just kind of, like, tailing this like resistance member that we're gonna tail here in a little bit, and so I still played everything sort of by the book, but anytime I got lost and the PMCs saw me, they were just like, oh hey, have a good night.
Dang.
I was like, all right,
that would make things so much easier.
What?
Jesus.
Yeah, especially when the vehicle section comes up, they just like drive by and we're like,
oh,
meep, meep, how
part.
You doing, have a great night.
Oh my
god, you
gosh.
Need a ride? And I'm just like, all right,
god damn.
Oh,
I'm furious.
Man. Yeah, it was crazy. Well, and I think you only get that octo camo from Non-Lethal on Laughing Octopus. So it is possible that you could be here without it.
Oh, I definitely don't ever. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
So it's not that much of a facepalm, but...
No, I had it. I definitely
anyway.
Had it.
Anyway. Yeah, Isaac, I'm curious. So this is like one of the most like format breaking parts of the game to some extent. So like it's still stealth, but like this isn't necessarily like when I think Metal Gear, I don't think of like Snake in a trench coat in the rain following a stranger.
Yeah.
Whistling songs. So this is like very not typical Metal Gear. So like how did this I knew this was coming and I've played this part before, so I kind of was like prepped for it. But like how did you handle this situation?
I kind of liked it at first because it broke up. it changed the way that it played the first two acts, and this one was just like, hey, you're gonna be just sneaking around trying to find somebody to follow. So I thought that was really cool, like a really cool concept. But I just didn't execute it very well, and I got pretty frustrated with it towards the end. But it was really cool. I liked it. The laughing octopus trick would have helped me a lot with my sanity, but...
it was the laughing Alessio trick for this playthrough, because I was just laughing the whole time.
And I think something's wrong with my TV, because when I first started, it was almost completely black, pitch black. It's like, is it supposed to be that dark?
I don't think it was that dark for me.
Oh, really?
Was it that dark for you, Patty?
No, it was kind of a yellowy dark. Like a Deus Ex kind of dark.
Yeah, it almost looked like somebody just like had been smoking on my TV for like 10 years, and there was just like a yellow like funk to it.
So what happened is Snake had installed the game and smoked all over your TV while he did it.
That's what happened.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it almost had, like, again, going back to it, it was like a weird Nier Automata, like, glaze to it.
Mm.
I'm just going to mention that game as much time. As I humanly can. You should buy that game if you're listening to this episode. Anyway, continue. I promise they're not paying me.
Yeah, so for the first two acts, I felt like there was a really clear direction on, here's a little target, and you go to this target. And this one was kind of more... ambiguous on what to do. And at first I was kind of lost. I was like, I don't really understand what I'm supposed to be doing. And then Otacon's like, dude, come on, man. Just equip the interceptor and hurry up. And so...
Yeah, it's like, hurry up and do what? Like, I was confused, too, because I feel like they don't do a very good job of, like... Well,
really
like,
don't.
I'm not...
Yeah.
I don't need games to hold my hand, but, like, at least tell me, like... Like, I get, like, Big Boss's body is in Europe. Yes. I'm in Europe. Got it. It's a curfew. Should only be PMCs, and no one else should be out. Who is this guy that is out now? But, like, there's not really any... Like, so, Patty, I want to ask you this question because you might know more than I because I've only played MGS4 once before this time.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just go to where the body is without having to follow this guy?
I don't think you can.
Oh, can you get to, like, the end of the bit and just walk up to the front door? I don't think you can because you need the resistant member there to open the door initially so you can sneak in and be the cool guy later. I've tried that. I've tried kind of just running away from the resistance member in the past. And it's like, hey, Snake, you lost him, you dumbass. Follow that boy.
Gotcha. Follow the man who's inexplicably whistling the same song as Sonny. The whole time, which I thought was very strange.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He just really likes the periodic table.
Yeah. But like, so nobody tells you, like, I mean, Otacon's like, hey, maybe you should follow that guy. But nobody is like,
yeah,
that guy's going to tell you exactly where to go. So you should just like stick to him completely. Like, it's kind of this like, and you can go anywhere. Because at one point I got lost and went to like two or three different screens that when I finally reset and started over, I never went to those zones once I followed the guy.
Yeah, I think the paths do change. Like, I think depending on what difficulty you do, there's more guys. I think the paths double back a bit more and they swap around a bit more. So I think you see more of it the higher up the difficulty bar you go, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's cool.
That's pretty much what I was seeing kind of across the board too. But yeah, it's a very big map.
Yeah, I got lost
huge.
A lot.
Yeah. Did you have fun in the park?
Craziness.
The park is my favorite bit in the first bit. The guy says it. Does he like? Because my guy peed. Did your guy pee?
Yeah, my guy. So I was like behind the little hedge maze, and then he's like walking, and then all of a sudden he just like stops, and then turns around really quickly and starts running. And I was like, oh fuck, what's going on? So I just like immediately like ran back and tried to find somewhere to hide, and then he just like pulls his dick out and starts peeing on a statue, and I was like, what? It was very confusing.
I must have gone and done a different thing or something because I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, it's quite early on. It's in the first chunk of it. In that bit, I kind of followed him and was kind of sneaking around the outside after he did his pee bit. I thought, I can take these two dudes out and let him through. And I kind of, he got a little bit alerted that something was going on when the two guys just sort of fell asleep in front of him. Mm-hmm. So he ran away exactly in the direction I was laying on the floor.
Oh, no.
And got, like, a meter away before he even saw me. And again, this is wearing the coat still. Like, I insist on wearing the coat now because it's more fun to be coat dude.
Can you wear the coat for the entire game? Because I think I'm going to try to do that.
Maybe?
That'd be...
This is going to be the coat run.
The coat run.
Yeah. The coat run. And he runs up and he looks at you and goes, hey, who's that? And he kicks you in the head and runs away.
Who are
what
you?
What a jerk.
Dude, I helped you. Those guys fell asleep because of me. I'm your magical fairy.
Yeah, that's super weird because I felt like I was like, I felt like this was like a weird slapstick comedy. Like, I don't know. To me, it felt like a weird like 90s like bizarro comedy movie, like Weekend at Bernie's or something silly. Because everywhere this guy would go, everyone around him would just pass out. And he'd be like, what? Cool, I guess, and then just like keep walking. Because at one point he's like surrounded by four or five people, and maybe that's later on. But I literally like they all fell asleep all around him, and he was just like, "All right, cool," and just like booked it. And so I don't. It was very bizarre. The whole thing felt very strange. It's like a surreal. Like, who got their Metal Gear in my European street simulator? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Well, maybe he felt super confident. You know, walking around, people passing out around him. He's like. Am I X-Men?
I'm either extremely attractive or X-Men.
Or the nap.
Something has happened. Yeah. The sleep.
The 15th member of the Cobras.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah.
I think I think I just took too long to get rolling because I don't remember a park at all.
Oh, wow. The park's pretty cool. Like, it kind of, for whatever reason, it reminded me of, like, GoldenEye 007. Uh-huh. The park did. I don't know why.
Did either of you guys get the secret fun thing you can do early on?
No, if you, what is this?
Okay, so if you're sneaking through, you can kind of hear other stuff. And you can hear, occasionally, you'll hear a very quiet sort of footstep sound, but it doesn't sound quite normal.
Uh-huh.
And if you... It only works in certain places, and you've got to nail it in one shot, or you'll never get a chance to do it again.
Hmm.
If you spin the camera around at certain points, you can see a very strangely shaped person in a trench coat following you. And if you see them, they see you, and they scuttle away.
That's very creepy and bizarre.
Interesting.
Yeah. Is that you'll see them later. Yeah, you'll see them later.
Okay, that's super weird.
Later on through, we'll come back to it. But yeah, you can see like a weird spindly trench coat thing following you, and then it vanishes.
Huh, that is very unnerving.
It's the literal definition of three children in a coat. Like, it is that.
Oh, you know what?
That's wonderful.
I do remember something. All right, this is later on, like in under one of the bridges. I was following
where children in trench coats go frequently.
Yes, exactly. I was following the guy, and ahead of me there was another guy poking his head out. But every time I would turn to look at him, he would pop and hide or whatever.
Yep, you found him.
That's very creepy.
I was like, man, this is weird. I don't know if. Oh my gosh. Okay.
And I only found this on like my my walkthrough, you know, second or third run, trying to find all the cool weird stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't notice this on my first run at all. Like, I heard noises, but I never knew what they were. It's really cool. Like there's a dude following me.
Oh my god. I like your
coat.
I want that coat. That's
sick coat,
bizarre.
Dude. Big fan. What'd you get?
Is it still open? Can I go there now?
That's so
weird.
There's
like matching hats.
There's like signs for shops that just say dolls. Like, there's no utility to this weird European like hellscape kind of like. It's like if somebody went to Europe, had a fever, and then came back to the United States and recovered 3 months later, and then told somebody like the fever dream version of their like night stroll through like rainy European city.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
It does feel like a fever dream. Creepy.
Yes. Once we get past this park area, we're in this sort of like midtown, sort of northeastern sector. A helicopter shows up with a searchlight, which didn't really... Did you guys have any trouble with this? Like, it didn't really... I didn't even notice anything with this, really.
Nah. Piece of piss. Piece of piss.
It was stupid.
Well, I don't know. My guy kept on... Like, I tranked all the guards... Then my guy would just like walk right under the spotlight and then get seen. I was like, dude,
he's like,
come
I
on,
need to
man.
Go towards the light.
And so other guards would come by, and then I'd have to trank them because they would take the guy away and blah blah blah. And yeah, this is the part where it kind of frustrated me because I was like, dude, just avoid the spotlight. Or
oh, no,
but he would like.
Is there any way to trank the resistance member, carry him to the door he needs to be at, and then just wait for him to wake up?
I tried that.
I don't think that works. I think he'll then just run away when he wakes back up.
Oh, no. He runs all the way back to the
beginning?
All
the way back.
I think he does, yeah. I think if you're not careful about which PMCs you trank, like, they'll just go and wake each other up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That happened to me with the vehicle section coming up.
To which point, I got quite twitchy because I didn't really want to be seen. I wasn't doing a perfect run, but I was like, oh, I don't really want to be seen. So I tranked them, get so far through the level, the guy would kind of get stuck waiting for two more guys, and I'd think... I'm going to be careful here. And I'd turn around, walk back, and shoot them in the goddamn head while they're on the floor. Mm-hmm. Just to be safe, you know. I'll just pull out my M1911 and it's pop, pop, pop. Right, okay. They're not going to follow me again.
Oh, no.
That's and hilarious.
They're never going to wake up.
Yeah, you trank them first, so they go down, and then you kill them while they can't defend themselves.
It's perfect.
Otacon's rough.
It's also known as the Bill Cosby strategy.
Ooh!
Yikes.
Yeah.
Sharp. Ooh, it's a sharp one.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh, that's some lemon juice. Ooh.
Anyway, so we show up to this sort of like midtown northern sector after that after the helicopter bit. And this was very bizarre to me because I followed the resistance member into this like backyard of like an apartment building. And then like yeah. the moment you run in, he just like gets magically dressed in a different outfit. And then you like, I had to run back out very quickly because I was like, oh shit, who is this? And it's just like a PMC outfit with a bicycle helmet on. It was very bizarre.
First time I got to this point, I just thought it was another PMC, so I just shot him.
Oh,
no. I was like, all right. And so I ran around this area, and I was like, I don't know where to go.
What's wrong with your hat?
Yeah, this shamefully, this took me a long time to figure out. To follow this guy.
I'm not going
to
shame you, Isaac, for that.
Didn't you hear him whistling?
Do what?
Didn't you hear him whistle?
Oh. Well, see, when the resistance guy in the civilian clothing went into the building, I heard him whistle, and this guy came out. I thought it was two separate guys, and I thought the guy was still whistling in there. I was like, all right, man. I'll help you out with this guy.
Yeah, the PMC is like, I gotta stop the whistling. Where's that whistling coming from?
Yeah, it was...
But if you put on your like, if you wear your solid eye, which I always do, it actually marks him with like a blue name rather than a red name.
What?
So that's another little tell. Like, ah, yep, he's a cool guy. That's fine.
Oh,
yeah, this guy is fine.
See, I didn't realize that. Yeah,
that's crazy. Shortly after this, so this is the part where like the four kind of guard thing happens. So what's weird to me is the PMCs aren't weirded out by this man with the bicycle helmet at all. Like, he kind of blends in really well with them, so much so that like a whole platoon of PMC guys like squad up around him at a specific point. Again, it's like you're coming around a corner and you're like running to keep up, and you like hang left, and then as you come around the corner, it's like there's just like four or five PMCs with our guy in the middle. And it was just like, oh shit, what's going on? So I
maybe it's a really good disguise. Maybe their commander wears a bicycle helmet. It's like Rydenovich thing, you know. True. Like it's
we don't live in this country. We don't see the day to day. Like he's been studying the upper echelon of the PMC.
Yeah, he's watched the Colonel. I was gonna say Campbell then.
Maybe it
That's
is.
Not.
Plot.
Okay.
Possibly.
It's Matt Campbell. It's Matt Campbell.
Back from the helmet. Dead. God, I just want Matt Campbell to come back in a big bad way.
Yes,
oh,
please.
Here's the thing. So while I was playing to catch up with this is a slight aside. I played through Metal Gear 3 again on the Vita. There is a Matt Campbell in the credits.
Huh?
I shit you not. There is a Matt Campbell in the credits on Metal Gear 3 on the Vita.
As in, like, that's the guy's name, or as in, like, it's a like a character credit?
It's a credit for a guy that worked on the game in the.
Oh my
god. Yeah, it's in the Blue Point port guide bit. But I saw it, I went,
the real Matt Campbell has appeared.
That's awesome.
That's phenomenal. I like that. Thank you for the quick aside.
Jaw on the floor. I was like, oh, please let them have seen that.
We have not seen
that. No.
That's wonderful. But yeah, so right around this time as well, once we have gotten sort of rid of the bigger squad of the PMCs that show up, Otacon kind of hops on the horn to let us know that, like, oh no, they're starting vehicle patrols now. And for me, where I've like literally put everyone to sleep everywhere that I go at all times, like an awkward, squeaky, like Mr. Sandman or something, essentially, whenever Otacon came on the radio and told me this, like, I hear this truck driving by. I didn't see it, but then I just hear like a honk, and I hear somebody go like, huh, get up, and they just like keep honking, and then I realize that the truck has like found the pile of sleeping guards and is like waking them all up one by one with the horn. So I had to hear this fucking horn thing like four or five times.
There's no time to kind of pick them all up and hide all the bodies, is there? You just pop them and leave them, right?
Yeah.
In the middle of the road.
It's very bizarre. Yeah.
Which is quite stupid when you think about it.
Yeah. Just these sleeping men in a pile in the middle of the street. Yeah.
So I managed to avoid the car for most of it and got seen by it at the very last corner.
Oh, no.
But it was okay because the resistance member had gone far enough that it didn't matter.
Okay.
It just kind of the alert just vanished. The guys were coming around the corner to shoot me, and then the kind of game faded down to the next cutscene. I was like, oh, thank God I'm not doing that again.
That's awesome. Isaac, did you get spotted by the patrol?
I can't tell you how many times I got spotted, died, combination
so
of both.
This truck was much like the inmates in Dead Rising that are driving around in the little courtyard in the same vehicle.
It's like they
very
aggravating. It's almost like they picked up the speed the longer it took. Because the first round it took them a little bit to come back all the way around, and then it just seemed like they would constantly be coming around, and I had to quickly hide.
Do you think they were doing time trials?
That's what it felt like. The resistance guy was walking so slow. I was like, pick up, just go. So it was quite frustrating for me.
Yeah, that's very weird because I when they passed the first time, I was like, oh, I'll probably just have to deal with it once.
Yeah.
But then I want to say they circled the block like four or five times by the time I got to the end, and I was like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah. So that was fun.
Well, thankfully, this is sort of the home stretch as well, because right after this, the resistance member just like throws his PMC clothes in like an alley and just kind of like gets back to business. And there's this sort of part where there's like a stairwell going up, sort of this like, elevated kind of like entryway into a building. And then just below there's two PMCs. So I just like tranked them immediately and then just kind of like kept a distance. And then like right after this is sort of this cutscene with the resistance member. Do you guys have any closing thoughts on this isolated weird portion of the game that kind of never comes back?
I wanted to do more of it. I really enjoyed it. Like, I think it's probably about as long as it needed to be. I think any longer and it might have outstayed its welcome, but I wouldn't have minded doing some more of it after a break. I think they got a lot of ideas out. Like, okay, we're going to do a tailing section. There's going to be a bit where he doubles back. He's going to have a pee. There's going to be a bit where he dresses up in disguise. There's going to be cars. There's going to be hell. Like, they thought of every idea. They did every idea they could think of, and then they stopped.
Yeah.
And I think actually that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say,
like, it never got boring. Every corner was new. Like, oh, what's this one? What's going to happen on this corner? What's going to happen on this part?
I
was almost waiting for the weird obligatory scene where it's like you follow him up the stairs into an apartment building, and then as you get to the landing, a door closes, but you don't see which one, and then you're just in a hallway filled with doors. Like, I was waiting for like some awful sequence that like that, and then I was like, oh, thank you God for not doing this to me.
Yeah,
I would have liked it if Resistance Phil had gotten into a box. Maybe that would have been fun.
Oh, that would have been great, actually.
The hunted becomes the hunter.
Yeah, that would have been wonderful.
That
like
been
Snake
awesome.
Just goes past a box and it's like, where are you going, Snake? And you're like, what? And you turn around and like there's just this box.
It's just a box.
Just a box.
I think Jesus. All right, so if I played this again, I think I would enjoy it more, knowing what to do. Because I was just running around not knowing where to go. Dying left and right. If I got that the laughing octopus camo, it'd be so much more enjoyable.
And I think it is actually easier if you do put your octo camo back on and just like blend into everything. Like, no one can see you.
Yeah.
Like, it is simpler, but it is more fun in a coat.
That's a good point.
Everything's more fun in a coat.
Even that cool hands in pockets walk. Like, yep, into it.
Oh, yeah, I love
that's
it.
A good point.
Yep. I would dare somebody to tell me something that isn't as fun in a coat with your hands in your pockets like that. Because I can't think of anything.
I've noticed a lot of the games I like seem to feature coats quite heavily. Like Bloodborne has a lot of really good coats in it.
Bloodborne has some fantastic coats, actually.
Red Dead Redemption, that's got a couple of good coats. There's some good coats in that game.
Yep, quite good coats. I feel like the number of good coats is it immediately mirrors to like the quality
it's
of the
like
game.
The coat,
yeah, like
the coat
Dark
rating.
Souls 3, basically no coats.
Yeah, Dark Souls 3, no zero coats out of coat.
is that the rating we're giving this game?
So how many coats does this game get?
We're not finished with it yet, so we don't know.
Oh. Good point. Yes, good point. Okay, fair enough.
Currently it has one coat. Actually, it's got two coats if you count the strange little rascals situation that's happening.
But I do like Otacon's coat at the start, that white one. That's a good coat.
Oh, that is a great coat. But it's a lab coat. Are we counting lab coats, or is this just...
No,
like
that's
strictly...
like a leather overcoat. That's like a coat.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. That's a sick-ass coat. So, and then, oh, no, there's loads of coats. Ryden has a coat.
That's true. Loads of coats.
Loads of coats.
Like Vamps is like a cool kind of like church guy coat.
Yeah, Vamps got like a I could be a preacher coat.
Oh,
man.
Which is cool, because didn't he burn down a church or something? That's not cool.
I'm sure he did. Wait a minute. I think actual Dracula did. I don't know if Vamp did.
So Metal Gear 3 is currently on a perfect coat score.
Man.
Yeah.
Loads
four.
Of coats.
Let's see how this goes.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see how the rest... Well, there's actually a pretty kick-ass coat coming up here in a second with quite a cool texture, if I do say so myself. Snake super sneaks the fuck up on this Resistance member in like... This, okay, for every moment in the history of Metal Gear where Snake has been in a very awful hiding place during a cutscene, this completely rectified that. Because the Resistance member, like, looks over his shoulder. Snake just, he's
like
he was
right
fucking
behind him.
There, and as the guy turned, he just, like, vanished. And then when the guy turns back around, Snake's, like, right there. Yeah. And it blew my mind. I was like, very good work. Like, kudos to you. You deserve this. Except for in mine, where he had the creepy fucking laughing octopus still on, and I was like, I don't like that face. That's very creepy. Please don't sneak up on people like that. Essentially he, like, almost like MGS3 style, like, grabs the dude, like, does some, like, weird body contortion shit, pushes him in the door, steals everybody's guns, beats everybody up, chokes a grown man with his knees, all that craziness. Just
CQC
makes all these, like,
really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. He just, like, flows like water through, like, a room full of men with guns. Mm-hmm.
Thing is, those guys, they could have just shot him once. Easily.
Just stay back, like, yeah, and shoot him.
Just poof, once in the shoulder. Poof. There we go, done. Do you know there's a cool L1 moment in this bit as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah. What, like, in the midst of the CQC where you can, like, look between the guards?
Yeah, and you can see the posters on the wall.
Oh, I didn't look at the poster. What were they?
Oh, okay, so as you're CQCing, you can do it, you can kind of look straight ahead, and if you turn to the left and right, there's like two on each wall posters. One of them is Metal Gear 1 themed.
Oh, cool.
One is Metal Gear 2 themed, and then there's two for Metal Gear 3, and they're kind of like full cast, you know, all the robots are on there, all of the people are on there, like, you know, they're big, arty, you know, the sort of poster you'd have spread up on a wall by itself, like, they're awesome.
That's super great. What the fuck are the Resistance members doing with their
big
posters?
Fans?
No idea.
It's in universe. That's the thing that nobody's told us this whole time. People have been making games about Snake's exploits during these games. But yeah, so, and then all of the hair on my body completely stands up at this moment every fucking time. But we get introduced to Big Mama in this gigantic cathedral.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a question. So this is going to be answered before the end of this podcast, but I want to ask right now, Isaac, did you realize who Big Mama was the moment you saw her?
Yes, I did, actually.
Oh, okay, cool. Because, like, the moment I saw her, I was just like, oh, shit, this just got real good.
Yeah. Mm. I was like, oh, man, you're a little old, but still would.
Whoa, Isaac, Jesus.
I'm just kidding.
But she's got quite a good coat on as well.
Yes, she does.
That's a good,
for those of you.
Good coat.
Yes. But it's so Big Mama is Eva. And it's just, I will say this. So in my hype for Metal Gear Solid 4, when this came out, I absolutely, like, my least expected character to return was probably, like, next to Eva was like Vulgan and Boss. Right? Like, I was just like, there's no way that they're going to, like, bring these people back. And so, like, this whole cutscene just being like, oh, no, Eva's back, and everyone you used to be friends with is actually a bastard. I was like, this is amazing. Like, I really enjoyed this, like, pivot yeah. that happened.
Oh, this is great, because there's, like, I hope you're ready for some exposition, because...
Yeah, holy shit.
Get, like, ready. And as I was writing notes for this bit, I'm literally sitting there with a pen in my hand, scribbling, because I didn't know you could pause the damn thing. So I'm just, like, no, liquid, ocelot, zero.
Something.
Patriots. MGS3, boy. What does that mean?
Hey, I'm a real MGS3 boy. I'll take that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's actually a save point in the midst of the exposition. Like, there's so much exposition that they're like, hey, do you want to save real quick? Like, you want to go get something to eat? Like, we understand. So, no, it's pretty great. And so we're going to camp out here because, like, we're going to – honestly, we're going to wrap up this first part of Act 3 just talking about the bombs that go off during this cutscene. And we're going to play up until that sort of save point before it kind of shifts back in.
Do you have, like, a bomb sound effect?
I can have one.
So
bomb number one, we find out that Eva is Snake's mom. Like literally, Snake's mother is Eva. She's surrogate. She's the surrogate mom for the Les Enfants Terribles project. Mm-hmm. She straight up calls Snake David in like this real bossy like David, and I was just like, oh shit, like
motherly mom's fashion. Here.
Yeah. The thing is, like, she said that she was the mother for the Les Enfants Terribles project, but only mentioned Solid and Liquid. Where did Solidus come from?
Yeah, and so that's the thing, too, is, like, because I actually had that sort of in my notes initially as well. I would be curious to kind of deep dive, but, like, it's almost like Solid and Liquid didn't even fucking know about Solidus at all. Because, like, if I remember correctly, even in MGS2, they're like, wait, what? So I don't know if he was, like, a secret snake. That's kind of what I feel like, right?
Secret snake.
Like, just like, I feel like they talked about it.
Tactical espionage baby.
I love it.
Oh, man.
I'm going to go down real quick on just to touch back on what we were talking about with the biblical stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's a real, like, so, okay, let's think for a second. So Adam, or Ocelot, or Adamska, and Eva, Adam and Eve. There's this like biblical imagery where randomly in the middle of the cutscene, like an apple rolled out of a dude's jacket
and
the middle of the cathedral steps. And it felt so like as that apple hit the ground, it's just like somebody threw like a piece of ham on the ground. And I was just like, this is the most ham fisted fucking like what is going on? And then Eva picks up the apple. And so it's like Snake and Eve and an apple. And she chooses not to take a bite. And it's just like, I don't, why are you doing this? Like, why, there's never been any religious imagery in any of these games. Like,
I think she's just got really terrible taste. I think she's thought, oh, it's Snake coming. I've got a good idea for a bit. Right, watch this, everyone. This is going to be cool.
Jeff, here, put this apple in your jacket. You're going to want to roll
and
it up.
And no one laughs.
Oh.
Yeah, and she's just like, ah, fuck. You've got your dad's sense of humor. But yeah, so in my opinion, it's literally just like, it's just imagery for imagery's sake. Mm-hmm. Like, I really don't think there's anything too elaborate here.
Yeah.
But Eva does mention, like, and I'm just going to go ahead and put this, like, right here, right now. And, like, this doesn't spoil anything for, like, future games for you, Isaac. But, like, arguably this cutscene marks the shift where, like, the series ceases to be about anything other than Zero and Big Boss's, like, disagreement. Mm. It's like from this point until like the end of the franchise as we know it, like everything is going to be centered around Big Boss and Zero and how they like are both in disagreement about like what the boss actually wanted.
Right.
And it's super cool. Like, it's super, like, for me, I just remember like when that moment, like, I know a lot of people were just like, what the fuck? Like, ugh. But for me, it was like all this big, bombastic, crazy, over-the-top insanity, like espionage that was happening throughout all the other games. It was so weird to then realize that like Major Tom from the fucking beginning of MGS3 is the big bad guy. And that like him and Big Boss have just been butting heads this whole time. I don't know. It was just super cool for it to like all of a sudden like... Instead of doing the Final Fantasy thing, where it starts out like very grassroots and then becomes like, oh, space demons are the big boss, it almost did the inversion, where it was like, oh, crazy nuclear warfare, like espionage, like political climate, and then it was like actually two dudes that can't agree with each other. It was weird.
It floored me. Like, the first time, I'm like, jaw on the floor, like, what is happening? Everyone is connected to everything, and like it's like a conspiracy theorist like wet dream. There's like a wall with red lines, and there's lots of string, and it's all connected, and it's all right.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's like it's actually Kojima's map.
Yeah. Someone's just seen the map. Right, the next cutscene, we're just going to explain this. Get the map, get some paper. This is going to take some time. We need a chart. Let's just throw 100 truth bombs at you. Yeah.
It's pretty great. So kind of working down the line, essentially Eva kind of retells Operation Snake Eater from her perspective, which is pretty cool. And before that, she had mentioned that, like, Zero founded the Patriots during the Cold War to kind of, like, make sure that, like, the American state never sort of waned. But what happened is, like, after the Cold War, the Patriots as an organization continued. And once everyone died, they were, like, replaced with AI, which could continue the plan forever. But essentially, in a nutshell, Eva talks about how post-MGS3, she had sort of failed her mission and was cast out of China, and she later met Snake in Hanoi. I'm curious, when she says she failed her mission, am I remembering correctly when it's because what she thought she stole from Snake wasn't the actual Philosopher's Legacy?
Yeah.
Didn't Ocelot steal the actual one and give it to Zero? Is that correct?
I think that's about right, yeah, because they mentioned that in the, I think it's the post-credits thing, Ocelot's like, yep, she had a fake.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because he's doing his weird, like, triple stabbing or whatever is going on.
So fucking cool.
Yeah, it was insane. But yeah, so those funds that were stolen by Ocelot and given to Zero, he uses to form the Patriots after MGS3. The Patriots were used to kind of, like, the whole MO for the Patriots was, like, we are going to carry out the final will of the boss. And their interpretation of that final will is, like, unified sort of control mechanisms keeping everybody peaceful forever. And by, I don't know, it's so weird because, like, where they seem to disagree is that, like, Big Boss saw the boss as, like, a fighter, like a warrior. And, like, the only place where the boss was truly alive was, like, on the battlefield. So Big Boss's interpretation of the boss's will seems to be, like, constant fighting, Valhalla, like, fucking heaven or hell, let's rock, just, like, keep the party going forever. And it seems like Zero's interpretation of that will of Big Boss is, will of the boss is, like, peace and harmony, even if it means, like, information control and, like, manipulation of the public, kind of. So that's kind of the, and, like, again, that's sort of the backdrop, because then we're, like, we're told that the, like, the Patriots were Snake, which Big Boss, Zero, Sigint, which we've discussed before, that Sigint, I'm pretty sure we've discussed it before. I'm almost positive we discussed it before, that Sigint is the DARPA chief.
Yeah, I think it had been hinted at, like, we all kind of had ideas, but this is, like, I think the first time it was confirmed. Sigint, who became the DARPA chief, Donald Anderson. Like,
yeah.
This is the first, like, yeah, that's right.
Yep, and then Paramedic, who's actually Dr. Clark, and Dr. Clark, if you pay attention, because nobody confirms if it's a man or a woman, Dr. Yeah. Clark is the person who did the fucking experiments to the cyborg ninja.
Yep, and ran the Les Enfants Terribles project as well.
Yeah, yeah, which is crazy, especially knowing that it's, like, goofy movie nerd, Godzilla buff, Paramedic, like, it's just like, what? And then Eva and Ocelot round off the team. And so Zero's whole thing was, like, every good ideology has to have a figurehead. And since the boss is dead, like, who best to elevate to that position, than Big Boss. And so Zero was like, Big Boss is going to be our front man. And he, Zero intentionally sort of, like, amassed all these, like, false tales of Big Boss and kind of spread them around, which is super cool to me because, like, since we've played as Big Boss before, we know that he's not, like, robo-mecha-Hitler, like, Godzilla-insane, like, over-the-top, powerful X-Man, right? Mm. Like, he's just a guy. So it's super cool to, like, then hear through Eva that, like, Zero essentially, like, spread a whole bunch of misinformation about this, like, legendary soldier, if maybe he, like, maybe he wasn't that legendary, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But through that through his false tales and his through his bullshit, hey, Big Boss is cool stuff. Like they've turned him into the Messiah. They've turned him into the Jesus figure.
For sure, it's almost like the most interesting man in the world. I almost imagine just people being like, "Hey, did you hear that Big Boss like strangled three alligators while driving a motorcycle through Central Park?" Like, just it's super
the
crazy.
New, it's the new Chuck Norris fact.
Yeah, exactly. But it's Big Boss.
Big Boss eats coal and shits diamonds.
Yeah. But essentially what we end up kind of being told is that Zero was worried that Big Boss was going to take off or die. And he sensed tension because, like, very clearly Big Boss was sick of kind of being manipulated into being kind of the poster child for this program. And so that's where the cloning happened with the Les Enfants Terribles project, where Zero kind of, like, lost his identity and friendship with Big Boss completely and kind of, like, cloned the man without ever asking for permission. And so through Dr. Clark and Eva, Zero was able to, I think it was Dr. Clark used Big Boss's DNA and the eggs from her Japanese assistant, which is why Snake has Eastern blood. And it's like fucking Q Vulcan Raven just being like, blood of the East flows through your veins. Like, it was just like,
really
very
good.
Like, what the fuck?
That's really good.
But yeah, so essentially Dr. Clark used her assistant's eggs, which is super weird. Like, I can't imagine, like, my superior at work being like, hey, Alessio, I'm going to need to use your eggs. Is that all right? And it's like, I guess.
Your eggs? What?
Yeah, my moist eggs. So she injects, like, Big Boss's DNA into these eggs, and then they take all of that and put it inside of Eva, and then Eva gives birth to Liquid and Solid. However, again, Big Boss did not fucking know this was happening, and Eva decided to do it because she loved Big Boss, even though Big Boss would never reciprocate, which was really upsetting to hear. And essentially right after that, Big Boss was like, fuck this, and left the United States and created his own mercenary company and kind of drifted away, which we are going to be playing all of that as the series continues. Big Boss never wanted Snake, but Eva says that she did. Essentially, after Big Boss leaves, Zero loses his fucking mind and just wants nothing but rules and regulation, and he creates this war economy and just kind of becomes this monster that we know today. And then we kind of discover that the Patriots eventually have so much influence and capital that they pretty much control the entire planet. And that's the story of Metal Gear, you guys.
Hey, like you say, I hope you like exposition, because... And, like, the rate that you're saying this is the rate that they say it. Like, it's just, here's the thing. Dr. Clark is actually paramedic. Sigint was Donald Anderson. Zero, Big Boss, Les Enfants Terribles, it's all linked. And you're just sitting there going, what?
Yeah. It's banana.
I thought the Patriots were all 200 years old.
Yeah, and then the whole time, too, it's just like, even the graphics aren't necessarily, like, what you're seeing on the screen isn't anything other than, like, some portraits of everybody's faces when they get mentioned.
And when they split, like the pictures just move away from each other. Like, it's good.
It's like somebody up there's got one of those like sports commentator like pencils that they draw the little like yellow circles around the soccer ball, and like they're just like here over here, yep, and then we're gonna fly over here, and it's just like, and then they split, and there's like this jagged line between them, and they're like, hooray! it's very bizarre, but it is. It's with I almost said Shinji Mikami. Holy shit. What is the artist's name who does the killer Metal Gear artwork?
Yoji Shinkawa.
Shinkawa. Why the hell was I thinking Mikami? I'm sorry. Because I'm a terrible person who confuses similar names. They're not similar at all. They're just Japanese, Alessio. You're an asshole. I'm sorry.
Would you like a spade to dig faster?
Yes. Yes. So that's everything. So, like, I figured that we can kind of camp out here and kind of talk a little bit about all this shit. I've clearly just voiced that I think it's really neat. Isaac, I honestly, other than, like, Act 4, because I think Act 4 is going to be the most fun thing to talk to you about in this game, this was, like, this moment right here in this game is the reason why I was like, I should get Isaac to play all of these games in order so that he can get to this part. What did you think about that?
Everything that the overload of information.
Yeah. What do you, when did this, I mean, did you play it like b- before we recorded the podcast, or like, have you digested it? Like,
a lot of it was, I mean, to be honest, you guys had kind of filled me in on a lot of it, whether you spoiled it knowingly or not. So, I mean, a lot of it really blew me away, but I sort of had that inkling, like, information in the back of my head from talking to with the past games with you guys on MGM and whatnot. You guys kind of threw out little tidbits of spoilers here and there about bits of information, but this kind of like globbed it all together, and I was like, oh my gosh. And then I was like, oh my gosh, because it was
everybody
a lot of information. And I'm not going to lie, some of it didn't stick. A lot of it was like, because she, like you guys said, she kind of just flies by and just throws information
yeah.
at you.
I was like fucking pausing like every sentence. Yeah. And I was like, hold on, hold on, Big Mama, I got to write this down. Like, I was like a court stenographer. Like, I was just like flying through these
She
notes.
Just says it like you know exactly, you know everything that she's saying. And she's like, and this, and this is how it worked, and then blah, 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 blah. And
in between all of these, Snake's just going, what? like every two sentences, he's like, who?
He's just playing with the Mark II in the corner. What? I'm trying to bump into your shin.
I wish you could do that in every cutscene. Just like press like the button to activate the Mark II.
That'd be hilarious.
It's like he's sitting there with his little PS3 controller going, I wonder if I can make him jump.
Yeah, Snake's just like, tell me which one to punch. That's all I care about. What's going on? But yeah, it's super cool, though. Like, I liked all the artwork and stuff. There was one fun moment where she was like, and that's where I met Snake. And Snake's like, Snake. And she's like, yeah, your dad's code name was also Snake. Naked Snake. And Snake's like, oh, okay. Like, it was just like, and then he gave you his code name. And it was like, okay, cool. It's one of those things where, like, and this happens to me a lot with Kristen, my wife, where, like, she'll just walk in on a specific moment of, like, a movie, a show, or a video game and be like, what the fuck are you watching? And just, like, think it's awful yeah. because of, like, this one isolated scene. I feel like this scene right here quite possibly might be the most polarizing scene in the entire franchise, because when you watch this Eva sequence, you're either, like, completely drunk on nostalgia and all of the hairs on your body are standing mm-hmm. up, or you don't know anything that this person's talking about and you're like, what the fuck is this? This yeah. sounds awful.
I think if you're the person that played this game first, this bit is just, and then blah blah blah,
yeah,
did the blah blah blah, and then yeah. did the blah 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 blah, did the blah 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 blah.
Exactly.
I thought this scene was really cool. Like, I was confused all the way up
yep,
until this point.
Yeah.
And not just MGS4. I mean, I was kind of confused on a lot of the storyline from MGS1, MGS2, MGS3.
Wait, Isaac, you were confused? I would never have got that from the show.
Thanks a lot.
He's actually the most put together on the entire show, is what you guys don't know. He's a character actor, and he's actually just been acting this
yes,
entire time.
Yes. This is, yeah. Exactly. Thank you, Alessio.
You're welcome.
But yeah. So this
it's
really
cool.
tied like, everything together for me, and it makes
it's interesting to me
sense.
How they've like shown every. So in the timeline, I feel like damn near every year of this world has been fleshed out. If not in front of us, then at least discussed. I feel like if I were to like throw my hat in for like a weird like Ground Zeroes-esque like mini campaign for them to like make, I feel like Snake rescuing Eva in Hanoi and then bringing her to join the Patriots would be a really fucking cool thing to like see happen. And it's weird to me like that the beginnings of the Patriots is like this weird part of the history that never actually gets shown to us ever, because like by the time we're done with the entire series, it's like we see like 90% of Big Boss's life. But it's super weird to me that like we don't see this like very pivotal like window.
Mm. Well, I don't think there'd be much game there.
That's true. Yeah,
it would be like a Telltale presents the Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd be down with that. Yeah.
Metal Gear.
And the choices are you can choose like, well, what do we make everyone else say? And you can choose which vowel, la li lu, or like it's us, the lu la lu lu li li. That doesn't sound right.
That'd be amazing.
It's like a puzzle game.
That's true. But yeah, and so yeah, it's interesting. I feel like between Big Boss like rescuing Gray Fox and Big Boss like rescuing Eva and like all these other characters, it's like kind of cool to weave these like tall tales about this like crazy man who's just like wandering the world.
You could even play the tall tales that Zero spread, you know, of that true. Time Big Boss fought off an army of sharks. That would be fun to play.
That would be amazing. they should just call them the tall tales of Big Boss's life.
Yeah,
the boss tales. Boss tales.
That time Big Boss took down all of Australia.
Yep, the Australian Big Boss War. I remember that.
Yeah,
in 2072.
The snakes are bigger and dangerouser.
The dingoes are all self-destructing. It's crazy.
Dingo hound.
Oh no. But yeah, so
Quartz,
yeah, I mean,
snake,
that's...
this is a stealth mission.
Patty, how fast did you get whiplashed during this sequence the first time that you played it many moons ago?
So first up, this is really cool because I it's been kind of cool hearing Isaac, like what you say about kind of following it and kind of actually getting this bit. Mm-hmm. Almost, it sounds like you get it. Because when I played this the first time, you know, I consider myself a big fan of the series, but I didn't do like a run through of the series before playing this. I just got Metal Gear 4. I was like, right, let's fucking get it on now. Yeah. Play the video game. Get it in me. You know, put the... No, let's not divulge into that.
Insert directly into eyeballs.
We're not talking about snakes at this juncture.
Yeah.
No.
So I was really into like, yes, fucking play it. So I'm watching, and then all this stuff was kind of going bam, 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 and I'm just jaw on the damn floor, because a lot of this, I hadn't made those connections. You know, I hadn't made the, oh shit, the Patriots are Snake and Zero and Siggin and what?
Exactly.
You know, and the Dr. Clark stuff, you know, was like, what? Hang on. Oh, I always thought Dr. Clark was a man. Mm-hmm. Just because we live in a weird male-centric society, I guess, and you just assume...
Or like every character in MGS1 that has a character model besides Sniper Wolf is, and Meryl, is a dude. So it's just like...
You just assume. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of cool kind of hearing Isaac, so you get it, because you've been playing these things and analyzing them closely over the last year and a half. You know, you've had it in you. It's similar to what I've had personally with here we go, Dark Souls.
Yay,
2 hours in and we got the reference in.
I'd love to talk to you about how Dark Souls 3 has anything to do with anything, because I cannot wrap my head around that. But
I can do it in
a different time.
Do it in two words. It doesn't.
No.
But yeah, so when I played Dark Souls 1 for the first time, with CJ playing along, the very first few episodes of our show, the first 20 episodes of me playing Dark Souls 1 for the first time, because we were talking about it, because we were analysing it, I feel like I was getting it faster than if I just played it on my own. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that you guys have been talking about it and talking it through, I think, yeah, like you say, Isaac, you've got a better ground for kind of just getting this stuff, because you've been delving in detail and you've had that continued thing. There's not been a 5-year gap.
That's true.
Between games, we've forgotten it all again. You know, like, if you'd have asked me during Metal Gear 2, like, during Metal Gear 4, explain Metal Gear 2. I go, there was a sweet boy, and he ran around an oil rig, and then they hit Manhattan, and then computer stuff happened.
Yeah.
And that's why I would have
cried.
Otacon cried. There was the best hug ever.
Yeah. There was like a Predator level bro moment in that game.
The best video game handshake ever.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, of all time.
And the way they throw the hand away and go for the hug, and I'm like, oh!
Those dudes. Yeah.
God, that's bro goals. Like, that's a goals moment there. To be able to just like clock hands and then just throw it away and just go for the hug, because you're secure in who you are.
Exactly.
You
Snake,
know.
Snake knows. He's slept with like 90% of the women on the planet, allegedly. Yeah. He's done
But
there.
Yeah, because of your close read, like you get it. My first run, I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. I was like, I mean, I was picking things up, but they just throw so much at you. By the time you finish, you're like, okay, now what? What? Whereas this time, on this run, it's amazing. Like, it just like it starts flying out. You're like, yeah, they laid the groundwork for that. Do I think they knew where this was going at the end of Metal Gear 2? Hell no.
Yeah, I don't agree either. Yeah,
why
would they
have done
the
200-year-old Patriots thing? Fuck off.
Yeah.
You did not plan that. Don't talk shit.
Yeah. I will say, if anything, I feel like at least by the end of MGS3, they kind of knew what they were going to do.
Yeah, I think they had that plan. They knew where they were going to go. And like you alluded to earlier, you know, it looked like Metal Gear 3 was going to be the last one, you know. And then it obviously wasn't. But they kind of laid some subtle groundwork hints in there that you could kind of see, oh, there's some links going on, there's some links. And then this is obviously the game where they explore those links. And really, I mean, this Metal Gear 4 feels like, right, we are tying this thing off. We're putting a bow on this damn game and it's done. We're going to leave no stone unturned. We're going to talk about every little thing that's happened and we're going to tie big old bow. And that's Metal Gear 4. And this is my present to you.
Yeah. And I would say, like, realistically speaking, like, when MGS4 is done, you could probably quit playing Metal Gear games at that point and, like, have all the information that you need.
Mm. Speaking of information, I'd like to know your thoughts on this. So now you've played, you know, once you've played the games through, you know, obviously a lot of us played them in release order.
Yeah.
Would you advocate someone playing in chronological order or not?
So the last time, other than when we started the show, like, right around the time that we started the show, I actually finished playing the games in chronological order.
How does that feel? Because
I really enjoyed it, but the whiplash of Metal Gear 1 and 2 happening, like, in the middle of that is, like, very intense.
Yeah. My sort of point on this is that while they say when you play it in chronological order, you get the story in chronological order, I don't think that's necessarily true. Mm-hmm. I think the way that the story has evolved from Metal Gear 1 through 2, through 3, you know, the way that these things have been drip-fed, I think to play Metal Gear Solid 2 after 3, after they've laid all that ground for the Patriots, and then go, yeah, they're 200 years old. That stuff would just jar me, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's like the retcon of Big Boss being Snake's dad, which, like, did not happen until MGS1.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, when you play Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2, it's like there's no mention of that at all. And then suddenly, like, within the first 3 cutscenes of MGS1, they're like, your father, Big Boss. And it's like, what?
Yeah, so I've always been of the opinion that, like, for me, the proper order to play them, I always felt should be release order.
For sure.
Personally,
yeah.
You may disagree. That's fine. But I
feel like the show's kind of a testament to that too, though, because, like, that's the approach that we've taken with the show, and I feel like it's lent itself to be easier to talk about this way.
Definitely.
So
imagine trying to explain why Big Boss is important first.
Yeah. Right. It's just like, I don't. Yeah, it'd be bizarre. But yeah, like, I think for all intents and purposes, like, by the time the credits roll for MGS4, like, really, the other games in the series, like Peace Walker and 5 and Ground Zeroes and I guess Metal Gear Rising is the only thing that's kind of like after, but it's kind of a spinoff. The core games in the franchise after 4, like, are totally just there for, like, hey, are you curious about that Big Boss shit that everybody was talking about? That's pretty much it, in my opinion. Like, I think Peace Walker and 5 do a good job of, like, adding more stuff to the universe to make it fun and engaging and great to play. But I think for all intents and purposes, if you finished 4 and you were like, okay, I understand this entire story now, thank you, that would probably be totally fine as well. You know what I mean? But you're missing out on arguably, I think, some of the better games in the series, because Peace Walker and 5 are pretty great. So. But yeah. So, I don't know. 5, when I say great, I'm going to put that in quotes. Mechanically, it's great. But I'm ready to die on that hill, you guys. When we get to MGS5, I feel like I'm going to have to be riding, shooting at the Metal Gear Rays from the end of MGS2. Because so many people on the internet want to, like, fight me about not liking Metal Gear Solid 5. It's so weird. Like, mechanically, it's great. But, like, story-wise, that game's fucking terrible. But anyway, I digress. Had to get it in while I could.
Take a jab.
You've got an entire season to talk about that soon.
That's true. It's very true.
It's going
to
be your Dark Souls 3 season. It's your Dark Souls 3 season.
Well, hopefully Metal Gear Survive is our Dark Souls 3 season.
Oh, jeez. Oh, I've just been sick in my mouth a bit. You reminded me that exists. Oh.
Ugh. But yeah, I'm trying to suss out where in the fuck I was going with all of this conversation about this stuff.
Lost.
But I will say this. The rest of Metal Gear Solid 4 is pretty great. I think Act 4 is great. The second half of Act 3 is pretty great as well. I don't know. It's just good. It'll be fun to see everything kind of come to its logical conclusion.
Yeah. The end of Metal Gear Solid 4 is, from this point on, the whole game really is, hey, do you like Metal Gear Solid? So do we. This is for you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, from
Enjoy
this point.
This. Yeah.
Yeah, from this point on, it's just like, hey, we heard you like Metal Gear, so we put Metal Gear in your Metal Gear so you can Metal Gear while you Metal Gear. Like, but to quote an old meme, yes. Anyway, I think that's about it. Closing statements on what we've already played was that it was a lot. I do want to ask. I remember now. So I've got a question for both of you guys before we wrap everything up and kind of do our plugs. So we've had a couple fans in the past ask us to do like a full-blown story retrospective kind of episode. I don't know if the games lend themselves well to that. Like, if we went through the plot beat by beat from, like, the beginning to the end. Whew. Like, what the... that just feels like an awful thing to listen to.
Yeah.
I mean, this is... I mean, kind of... It is kind of what you're doing here, though, in a way.
Yeah, it's like what the whole show is, as opposed to, just like, trying to cram it into an episode.
Fast forward through the game bits.
Yeah.
The gameplay, yeah, just listen to the cutscenes, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't even know like how you would package an episode like that. Like, where do we start? How do we talk about it in such a way that it's not just you listening to somebody droning on information? Like, read a fucking Wikipedia article. Like, come on. Get out of here. So, I don't know. I don't know if that would be engaging for a listener or not. Maybe we can find a way to make it fun to listen to, but I don't know. There's so much going on that you can't really skim over
specific stuff.
This stuff has built up, and a sort of consciousness has kind of developed over the years.
Yeah. No, I mean, truthfully,
under the White House.
I'm blown away that GW stands for George W. Bush, actually. I'm kind of blown away that Kojima is actually able to keep up with all this nonsense. And, like, granted, some things got retconned and things have been changed and stuff like that. But, like, the fact that anybody was flying by the seat of their pants and doing this is mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the fact there's no real... By the time we finish, I don't think there's that many plot holes, really, by the time it's finished, are there?
Yeah, they use, like, every part of the animal in this meal that is prepared for us. Like, every aspect has been, like, salvaged and utilized in some way. So... Yeah. Well, unceremoniously, that's been the episode. When we pick back up, we will hopefully be having Patty back, along with Sam, the best pod boy.
I really want to, because the next chunk contains some of my absolute favorite Metal Gear content, I think, ever.
Yeah, I think Sam agrees with you on that as well. So we are trying to make sure that we can find a way to fit everybody in. Also, it's been too long now. I think this is episode 3 without Sam. And holy shit, does this feel very different without Sam.
I miss Sam.
So, yeah, hashtag Team Sam. Well, cool. So before I go through my crazy laundry list of things to plug, Patty, where can people find you on the internet?
They shouldn't.
I'm off the grid.
Yeah, I'm unplugged, man. I'm out of the system. I've turned my nano machines off. Fuck you, SOP.
How are you gonna get out of train stations now?
It's fine. I'll just poop. It'll be fine.
You just awkwardly stand there with a cigarette.
Yep, and until someone comes to help me because I wasn't paying attention. you can find me on the Twitter, which is at Paddy Stardust. Because hey, look, Metal Gear Link, I really like David Bowie, and I made that username when I was really young, and you know, David Bowie kind of is in Metal Gear mostly now, so awesome.
Yeah, that's true. Did you at some point say, actually, it's not Patty Stardust, can you just call me Patty Zero?
Oh, Christ. Oh, I will now. Change a Twitter name. There we go.
Can you imagine how amazing it would be if he was still Major Tom? Like, if they were like, Major Tom, they're just like, Big Boss, from now on, we're going to refer to you as the Action Man. And now we've got Major Tom versus the Action Man.
Jeez, like playing with the plastic toys.
Oh no, you're right.
Speaking of toys, so if that isn't enough, you can also follow my podcast I make with my cohort CJ. We do the Twin Humanities Dark Souls podcast, where we kind of we used to play the games and kind of talk our way through them. Now we talk more about the community and sort of things around
the
games.
Loss of Dark Souls 3.
Yeah, because I just don't give a shit anymore, man. I just don't give a shit, and it sucks because I just I'm trying to bring myself to talk about the Ring City soon, and I just like it's fine. It's all right. But yeah, I'll go into detail soon. We also do an offshoot podcast, which comes on the same feed called Oh, the Humanities, which is where we talk about other stuff. For me, recently, that's been a lot of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, because that is my goddamn jam. It's taken over my life this year.
To be continued music, though, am I right?
Oh, my God. Do you know, this week, because of a PSN Easter sale, I now own the PS3 and PS4 JoJo's Bizarre Adventure fighting games.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it's like one of them's £3 at the minute. I'm like, well, that's £3 well spent.
That's crazy.
That's less than lunch. Fine.
So I don't have a ton of familiarity with JoJo's, but I do know somebody throws a steam roller onto somebody and yells re at some point.
Yeah, that's Roda Rolada.
Okay.
And then he shouts, Uri! And the voice actor for Dio is the greatest. It's incredible. If you don't watch JoJo, watch JoJo. Listen to one of our Other Humanities episodes where I tell you to watch JoJo. Basically, I'll just do that for an hour. Cool. It's on Crunchy. It's incredible. Like, it's like nothing you've seen. It's brilliant. We also occasionally did a show for 6 episodes. It's more of an every now and again, called Twin Destiny, where we talked about Destiny when it came out, and we kind of popped back every now and again, and it was a fun show. You know, we did the raid, the very first raid for the first time, the Vault of Glass, and had the entire team on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which was really, really good. We went in as acquaintances, we came out as a squad. And you can also find me on the YouTube. Again, that's on Twin Humanities Pod on YouTube, and we put all our podcasts up there in YouTube form as well, if you'd rather listen to it there. And I've also been putting up videos and stuff. In the past, I've made a couple of craft videos. I've made Estus Cocktails, if you're into that. I've made Estus Pizza.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, Estus Cocktails are good, man. a listener of the show, Lachlan McDonald, told me that he got the third drunkest and third illest he's ever been on those.
That's amazing. So that's the best thing to do it on.
Yeah, man. And I've also been doing a Dark Souls 1 one bro run, which is where you beat the game at level 1 and never level up. And, ooh, it's difficult. It's difficult. But I've been slapping up 10-15 minute episodes of that every couple of days, more as an incentive for me to finish it. So
that sounds like playing Hotline Miami within Dark Souls, is what that sounds like.
It basically is. It's like, do a good job. Did you do a good job? Did you mistake once? Start again.
Start again, yeah, all over.
But there
again.
Are things. There are things you can do, and I'm actually doing rather well at the minute. I'm pretty proud of myself at the moment. So yeah, I think that's everywhere you can find me. Yeah, why not?
It's a lot of quality stuff. So
thanks.
It's got the Metal Gear Mondays stamp of approval. I don't know what the fuck that's worth, but you do get that, Patty. So congratulations.
Oh, do you get like a key ring or something?
Sure. Yeah, we'll figure it out. It'll be wonderful.
I will clip it to my current Foxhound key ring.
It's actually a cardboard cutout of Big Boss's face that you can, with some rubber band, just wear around in front of your face. Yes.
But the fun part is the rubber band doesn't line up with the eye patch band, so I've got like two.
Frustrating. Yeah,
it's awful. So you have two eyes that you can't see out of, realistically. But anyway, Isaac, where can people find you on the internet? I love the reluctance every single time I ask you this question. Like, I'm like obligated to be like, Isaac, where can people find you? Because I asked the other people. I know damn well where they can find you. Nowhere. They can't find
Isaac anywhere.
Except for this like elephant graveyard Twitter account that you've been holding on to just for this
show. It's good. Yeah. I like it a lot. It's been treating me well. You can hit me up at doesn'thaveatwit.com. And
how many are you on now?
How many am I on?
How many followers or tweets? I suppose that's divide one by the other.
How many websites are you on? How many
divide followers by 10.
Let me look.
How many followers are you up to? Are you doing like a 6 for 60?
What if Isaac happens to have like 17,000 now? It's like out of the blue.
I have 59.
Oh,
so sorry, guys.
Really so that tweet
so close. So close.
No 6 for 60 today.
Soon. Hopefully on the next one. Well, cool. So let me run through the quick laundry list of shit that I am professionally and personally obligated and not obligated to say, but choose to say. You can go to forevernastronaut.com for all things Metal Gear Mondays right now. So we actually just started our Dev Diary podcast, and we spoke with Ditto, the head developer for the game Goner. If you guys are familiar with that from 2016, it's like this crazy hand-drawn like platform game. It's wonderful. But essentially, James Reichmuth from Forever an Astronaut hosts a podcast where he talks to indie game developers all over the world once a week. They talk about what it's like to bust ass and be an independent creative with no money. And it's pretty fun. It's been good so far. Besides that, we have the Forever an Astronaut podcast, the official podcast, Nocturnal Transmissions, where we talk about filmmaking and like digital media creation. And right now we are kind of camping out on script writing, screenplays, and theater plays and stuff like that. Got a couple cool guests lined up. But yeah, if you want to support the studio, we're currently producing Dev Diary Season 2, which, fingers crossed, should hopefully be available through a bunch of different distribution platforms like the first season. The first season's got some really, really big news that hopefully we can officially announce at some point soon. If you're interested, you can check out devdiaryseries.com. But yeah, that's pretty much it. You can patreon.com/foreveranastronaut to get all the podcasts at least a day early, sometimes earlier if I get the editing done sooner. And you can also get the whole first season of Dev Diary if you want to. Right now it's 45% off on Steam. Actually, it's cheaper than the Patreon perk for you to just go get that first season. If you've seen it, definitely leave us a rating on Steam or IMDb. And if you wouldn't mind with this show, please rate and review us on iTunes or tell a friend. And please use hashtag Metal Gear Mondays on Twitter so that I can pull all your wonderful, wonderful tweets when we do the listener response side ops and stuff like that. But yeah, I will say this. If you have feedback for Act 3 of MGS4 or any of the previous acts, email contact@foreveranastronaut.com before, I would say at least like before Wednesday, if you haven't already. So 2 days after this releases, which is going to be, let me double check the date because I'm a lunatic and don't have dates memorized. The 12th. So April the 12th. I'm not entirely sure when we're going to be recording with Sam and Patty. But that seems like a good time to do it. So we've got some responses from folks that we will address on that episode regardless. But for those of you who still haven't sent anything in, you can use that contact email or you can go to facebook.com/Metal Gear Mondays. That's it. Patty, do you want to take us to the hole?
I do have something I'd like to talk about. I've got a story that happened the other day.
Okay. Okay.
Well, you see, the thing is, right, so first I was afraid. I was petrified. I was just looking for a thing to hide Old Snake inside. So first I tried an oil drum, but that turned out to be dumb, because Johnny's tum had made some smells come out his bum. I threw it out, and Snake then hid behind a wall, but it was small, and Snake decided to get rid. He found a flat thing stuck behind an open door. It's made of cardboard. And Snake set it on the floor. That sneaky fox. It's just a box!
Just a box.